Welcome back to another exciting episode of Extra Features Interview. Today we have two fabulous guests. One's a producer, so we're going to find out all behind the scenes. And one's a fabulous actress. We have Alok here.
Alok.
Alok and Naomi, welcome to the show. And their film 1BR is available on Netflix right now. So they're going to spoil it. They told me ahead of time, so I know I don't normally do this on my show. Please, please, please watch the film first, then come back and get all the insights.
Yes.
So I guess we'll start the thing. You're a producer. You get a script. How did you know this was the one?
We were looking for a little while. I have a producing partner, Shane Borister, and we have a company called Malevolent Films. And, Shane and I used to test movies for a living. We did market research for film. So we did all the big, studio pictures, as well as, like, independent films and stuff, too, as well. But we had, like, a company that literally had, like, 80% of, like, everything that was being tested for, like, 7 years, let's say. And before that, we were fighting to become number one. So we did a lot of testing, and I, in particular, was the horror guy. I like testing horror movies and talking to horror filmmakers and, kind of figuring out what was, in their secret sauce to some extent. Like, Jason Blum, we knew from Miramax, actually, before he started doing horror movies and everything. And we got to kind of see his rise and in continual rise, let's say. And he was very sort of like instrumental in letting us sort of kind of see behind the veil a little bit as to what he was doing. He just has a really good eye for material, to be honest. And he keeps prices very low, used to at least. Now he doesn't do anything for less than like $5 to $10 million. But before that, it was, testing the Paranormal Activities and the Insidiouses of the world and, the Purges and different things like that. And so, that was our background, and we sort of, I kind of had a come to Jesus moment where I got divorced and had a, like, what is it all about sort of, kind of thing. And I was like, well, I need to produce films, because I thought I always wanted to do that, but I kind of got sucked into this, like, very seductive world of testing movies, which was like, paying the bills like a motherfucker. And like, can we curse, by the way? I'm sorry.
Go ahead. Yes, absolutely.
All right. Naomi's mom hates when I curse, but I just can't help it. Like,
he always asks after he drops a big bomb. That's all.
It's not untrue.
As long as there are other people listening other than just my mom. That's all.
I would hope so. But you never know. Any audience member I can get, I'm in.
Well, you got her. You got her.
You got her for sure.
Get rid of her.
Got her. Well, so I had a, what is it all about sort of moment. And I was like, I need to do this. No one's getting any younger. I mean, you can see what's like this shit going on my beard right now. This is no good for anybody that's listening to this, by the way. But I'm an old person. I'm like 48 years old, and I just decided I need to do something. So started looking for scripts and, had the ability, to kind of, look for like a year and a half. We had a couple different things we almost started on. And truth be told, the reason the script came around was because my wife went to high school with David Marmer, our writer-director, his manager. There's two of them, actually, Allard Cantor and Jared Murray. They have a company called Epicenter. And we had one of those douchebag lunches that you have in Los Angeles. Like, you talk about yourself, what you're working on. Oh, what projects are you working on? That kind of bullshit. And he sent me two scripts, and I was like, I didn't read any of them for 6 months. I didn't read them. Just didn't read them. Because I actually had another project that was about to go. We were trying to work on that very hard, and so that fell through. And I was like, holy shit, what do I do? So I looked for, scripts, and I found these two scripts that he had sent me. One of them was the movie Tragedy Girls. And Tragedy Girls is a great horror comedy, in testing movies, it's very hard to do a horror comedy generally. I mean, they're kind of like white stags. I mean, you get the Shaun of the Dead every, couple years, let's say. It's really difficult to do. And so I told them, yeah, I'm not interested in this one. And they're like, well, we just finished shooting that like 5 days ago. And I was like, okay, what the fuck do I know? So the other one was 1BR. And they set up a meeting with David, and we, you know, hung out, and he was super smart guy. He'll never tell you, like, he went to Harvard and, you know, USC for graduate school, and, like, you know, in between that started a video game company that sold to Activision, and so he's very techie and, like, but also super sweet and incredibly intelligent and just, like, a really great person to work with. You know, he's very – he listens to, you know, our notes. We listen to him. You know, we have patience with each other. We have so much – we have such a good time working on this film, even though it was like a slog. I mean, it took us, like, you know, started shooting 2017 Christmas and came out, you know, 2020 April, right? So, we did a festival run as well. I mean, you know, in 2019, but, it was a thing where, you know, we got along and we're doing his next movie with him actually as well. So we can't tell you what it's about because we like the J.J. Abrams and shit out of that stuff. I'm not telling you shit, you know, but, it'll just appear one day and we'll be like, what's in the box? And we'll tell you. You got to pay to see what's in the box. But anyway, got along with him famously, and that's sort of the story. I mean, the rest is history. Like, you know, we met and got along and had the same sensibilities, and he's a first-time director. We were first-time producers. What could go wrong?
Okay, Naomi. After that big, long speech, I did notice a lot of camera movement in this film. I mean, being an actress, I guess you do notice camera movement at times, or, you know, stagnant shots. So did you know what you were getting into with the directing of this film beforehand?
The direction, no. You know, the director often, unlike with theater, the director is, you know, with theater, you, like, live with the director for months on end, you know, whereas with film and television, oftentimes you're meeting them, like, sometimes a day of, you know. In my case, I was pretty much in because I'm an old friend of the Lokes, but he did have me audition, which was, of course, just a formality to meet David, although I didn't know that at the time. So it was a little bit of a, you know, a mind F. But, you know, that's what we do, actors. In any case, so no, I think I wasn't, you know, in film and television, the director is often sort of like the liaison between the tech and the more creative. I don't, does that make sense? Like, you know, there's they're looking at everything, you know, whereas like the camera is mostly just looking at the tech and the, and then of course the actors are just, well, looking at themselves, but, you know, he's sort of, overseeing it all. And so no, I can't say that I was necessarily aware of, you know, camera movements or anything like that. If anything, it's not really my job. You know what I mean? My job, if anything, is to, like, trust the director. And I did. I mean, I knew he was a first time director, but, I did know that, you know, he went to Harvard also, although he wouldn't tell us. But I knew that, you know, I was in good hands.
He also had done a number of, a couple of different shorts that were actually very strong. And we all kind of enjoyed, and we're like, all right, this, he definitely has an eye. He definitely has a style. He definitely has, like, a vision. So that was the other thing that sort of, you know, cemented it in our brains.
Well, for me, another vote of confidence is just the script itself, which, of course, David is also responsible for. You know, I always say, like, if you don't have a solid script, like, it's like, you know, if you don't have blueprints, you don't have a house. Like, if it's not a solid foundation, like, give up, like, don't build that thing, you know. And the fact is, we had a really strong bones to work with, and so I felt like, you know, as long as you have that, that's critical, you know. And we had
Oh, you know, it's so funny though. You always hear about movies like, you know, The Bourne Supremacy and The Bourne Ultimatum. We're like, we didn't have a script when we went in. Like, we just, like, went in. How does it turn out? Like, I mean, you have to be so skillful a director to make that happen, but it's like, you know, for small budget, no budget kind of stuff, like, you need to have a very strong script going in. And in fact, the script was great, and in fact, we had to cut stuff out of it just to be able to afford to make it, if that makes sense.
Yes,
because there was better stuff in there, and there was stuff we had to cut out, and, like, we even shot to some extent, too, and we were like, oh, this doesn't work, you know, it just doesn't work as far as, you know, what we're trying to the story comes together a lot of time in the edit and becomes something else even more. And so that's sort of what happened in certain circumstances. But there was other stuff before that even that we had to cut out just because we didn't have the money, you know?
So I'm back to you. I got a question. How do you find your locations? I mean, obviously as an actor, you just show up. I know how Naomi finds her location. How do you do as a producer?
Well, you know, it's a thing where you don't have money and you're like under the gun, let's say. We were looking for that location literally up until a week before we shot. And so everything that you see that's like the exterior of the apartment is actually a real functioning apartment complex, which funnily enough, I had to move to the Valley because I have a baby and some shit. And like, you know, my parents live near, you know, the Valley and whatever. And so I, you know, thought moving here would be good as they'd help out. And COVID happened and I could get screwed. But this apartment complex is 2 miles from my house now. It's literally around the corner from where I take my German Shepherd to the veterinarian. And stuff. So every time I go take her to the veterinarian, I usually cruise by and I'm like, ding, 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 there she is. And they're like, but they were so nice, the apartment complex, actually, because that particular place was, the apartment complex is as much a character in the movie as anybody else, let's say, you know, because it really is a thing where it looks very uniform and it is that kind of Southern California stucco shitty apartment that all of us have lived in at some point, living in like LA. And in fact, you know, our writer director, David Marmer, lived in exactly this kind of apartment. And he also had a secret cat. Like, he wasn't supposed to have a cat and he had it. And it caused him a lot of like, you know, crazy, displeasure because he'd like be worried about if the cat gets out, then the cat's out of the bag. Like, they're going to catch me. They're going to like, you know, find me or kick me out or whatever. And so it was a constant, a sense of tension whatever. But the point is that he lived exactly the same thing, which inspired the whole movie. And so when we found this place, like a week before shooting, and we had another place that we were actually going to book, which wasn't even as good as this place. And all of a sudden they were like, yeah, we need $2,000 more. And we're like, we don't have any money. You don't understand. Like, you know, whatever we just gave you with all the money we have, you know, and so these fuckers. The idea is though, we went and looked at this together. And because we were location scouting together, we had a location scout that was helping us, but like we would all just go look at it and make sure it makes sense to all of us. And him and I looked at the thing at the same time. We're like, this is the place. This is absolutely the place. Like, it really does have this sort of uniformity. It feels like it's almost like almost sort of prison like or whatever, in a way. And so that was one aspect. The other aspect was that, you know, these people that were actually living in the apartment complex, this is a full functioning apartment complex, they were so nice. It was so nice to us. They were just like, you know, they were like, can we be in the movie? And we're like, fuck yeah, you can be in the movie. Money grubbing producer here. I'll take a free extra or three or five or whatever. And so that was great. The only other thing that actually gave us a little bit of agita was that the whole place is supposed to be like a, you know, I'm not spoiling anything because this is in the trailer, a pet free, smoke free complex, right? And so there'd be times where there'd be like a dog barking in someone's apartment. We're trying to shoot, right? We're like, can someone just go? Tell them, give them $20 and tell them to take this dog on a walk, right? And then there was one time where we're like, this person just wasn't home and the dog was just barking and we're like, do we need to break into this apartment to like, you know, do something with this dog? Allegedly. But, you know, it was a thing where, you know, it was a tough situation. Thank God they got home at some certain point and we got, like, told them $20, take the dog on a walk. So it worked out at the end of the day, but it was a full functioning complex. And that's the outside of the thing. The inside of the thing was a studio. We were in a studio. So every single time you see the inside of the apartment, like you see like, you know, four different apartments or whatever, you know, it's all dressed up. They keep on what they would do is shoot during the day. And then at night, like this crew would come in and just turn the thing into something else. And, you know, Ricardo Jatan is our production designer. He was a genius, and he just did an amazing job. Every night they'd come in. We'd come back the set the next day, and we'd be like, oh, okay, this is cool. You know, like it was just that. Movie magic, as they say. So.
Okay, Naomi, I did have my questions for you, too. Do you find when you're going to an audition for an indie film, is it harder than a mainstream production, or they're exactly the same and you treat them exactly the same?
The audition process is the same, honestly. I mean, and even that has changed since COVID. You know, now, things are, you know, a lot of stuff is self-taped, of course. Although occasionally now there's the live, Zoom audition, which is, you know, stressful because you know, once upon a time, I was like used to having to go in the room and nail it, you know, the first time. And now, you know, we've gotten kind of lazy. Like, you know, you can do it 5 times, 10 times, however many times you need. And now it's like, oh gosh, you mean I got to get it right the first time, just like old times, only I still don't even get the experience of like walking in the room. So, you know, it's not to say that it hasn't changed. Although let me tell you, I do not miss, I used to have like a nemesis who I would see at auditions, and I swear she did a number on me before I'd go in. I would manage to psych myself totally out of the role, and it's like, ah, you can't do that. So I do not miss seeing this person, in the waiting room. But you know, there's also like all kinds of other, like we all deal with, anyone who's, you know, even on a Zoom cocktail party, you know, it seems like whenever I, you know, have especially one of these like, you know, in-person Zoom auditions, that's when the leaf blower decides to, you know, come, like who even cares about these leaves? And yet apparently he does, you know, so there's definitely, obstacles, with auditioning nowadays, but I can't say no, it's the that process is no different. The only real difference I found, because it's true, I have done, well, I've done high budget TV and low budget film. And, the real difference is obviously money. You know what I mean? Like, you know, my job is technically the same no matter what, whether they're paying me a lot or a little. But you know, in the case of a bigger budget project, they can throw money at problems, you know, and they can afford to take time, just like Alok was talking about. You know, so often in low budget, it's like, do we get it? Moving on. Whereas, you know, so many times, like, I mean, I know American Horror Story, for example. I mean, everything, they are meticulous down to, you know, and it's not to say that, you know, the 1BR, crew wasn't meticulous. It's just they couldn't afford to be, you know, that level of meticulous. You know what I mean? I mean, 1BR was shot with, you know, money that, Alok allegedly remortgaged his already paid for house to do, you know, to make. Whereas, you know, let's face it, American Horror Story's got like a, I mean, bazillions of dollars behind it. Like, I don't even know how many millions are go into any one episode even. So, you know, they've got somebody on staff just to put my lens in my, you know, in my eyes. They have someone on staff just to, you know, pull the tent so that it looks windy. Like, that's his job. And guess what? He's the best wind maker in all of Hollywood. Like, it's incredible. You know, the staff and, you know, just resources they have. And, I mean, you know, that's what happens when you, you know, have money.
We were shot in 15 days, right? 15 days in December. Because December is like a good time to shoot, because people don't have jobs normally, and they'll work for cheaper. So the money goes in producer hands, right? So the other part though is that we realized, you know, that to do it over again, I would have shot in 20 days, because we had to actually go back and do reshoots, and we had to get the band back together, so to speak. And these guys are all working actors between the Naomi doing American Horror Story and other things, like, you know, Taylor Nichols is on like PN15. And like, you know, what's it called? Perry Mason. Yeah, and some of that. So we were able to get people back, like, but not until like September. Like September of 2018. So we did that. We went back and no one was happy with the ending. So we shot like two different endings. So we have like two other alternate endings, let's call it. Can't tell you about them because I'll be on a Blu-ray someday. I'm going to keep that in the box a little bit. But we shot for that much time, and it was really great. This is a testament to basically Naomi Grossman, is that, like, you know, you don't get nominated for an Emmy very often in life, like, let alone, you know, you never know, right? When will you be nominated again? Naomi Grossman got nominated for an Emmy, and the week that we had to shoot was like the week of the Emmys. It's just that was the week. And so she was just like, God damn it, Mishra. I'm going to come back and do your shitty little movie. She didn't say shitty, but she
didn't say, "Mom, I did not use that language."
Mom, she did not use that language, but she was just like, "I'm not gonna, you know, I have to come back into your movie when I'm supposed to shine and go to all these parties and gifting sweets, the trips to Barbados and like stuff like this." And so she was so sweet and so awesome. And I think that she actually, you know, I think she will tell you she generally saw something in the film that made it worthwhile to come back and do these reshoots with us and stuff. And plus, I also told her, I said, "Listen, we squandered you. Naomi, squandered you. We should have, this whole fucking movie should be called 1BR, The Chronicles of Janice. And it's, and I swear to God, we gotta put more of you in this movie to make it the hit it's gonna be." And of course, she believed it.
Yeah, that's all it takes with me, but, hey.
It was a lie, of course, it did, but.
You did squander me though, you did.
That's true, but you know what? I mean, not to spoil anything, but we're spoiling things here. You're still alive. And, you know, who's to say that this whole, like, 1BR colon, The Chronicles of Janice couldn't happen? I mean, who's to say that you're now the boss bitch in charge of everything because certain people are dead, or whatever's happened here, you know? So we don't know, is the idea.
I like it. Okay. Yeah,
there's a lot of places
all
to
right.
go. That's what I'm just saying.
Okay. Here's
we squandered you. We squandered you, Naomi.
I have a strange question. I hope it hasn't been asked. Was the barbecue scene also your lunch scene? Your lunch?
No, it wasn't. It was a straight up scene. It was.
Oh wow! I'm shocked. I thought for sure that was going to go for lunch.
That's what. That would. You know what? That's good thinking.
That would have been smart.
Next time, well, I'll think about that.
The food looked good. I'm like, oh, there's lunch for this shot.
I mean, it was fake hamburgers. Let's be
the problem is continuity. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I mean, there are rules. Like, you know, Screen Actors Guild is going to say, like, look, you break for lunch at this hour, you know, and what if you eat your whole burger? Like, what's continuity going to do with that? You know what I mean? Like, you can't keep actors or crew for that matter from, like, actually eating their lunch.
Well, one interesting fact that I learned for the first time is that, like, literally, if you have to have any sort of fire on set, like, whether it be the grill, even the stupid grill, which was a fake grill, right? I mean, it was like, you know, whatever. That wasn't the grill they have in the complex. They have grills at the actual apartment complex, but we decided to need something sexier. So, if you put any kind of fire on, you have to have some fucking fire person, right? And so it was like a thing where you just act the shit out of frying those burgers, Taylor Nichols. You know, that's what happened. Like, so there's no real food being made there in that regard. Anyway, hope that answered the question.
It did. Naomi, how's it feel to get shot?
Well, wait a minute. Did I get shot in this?
There's a part where Sarah shoots the gun and it's shot high, but she doesn't get shot. She just gets hit.
Oh, I thought you got hit because it looks like there's something on your face.
No, she's just crying. There's a lot of snot.
Okay,
No, it's true. I remember Sarah's kind of wielding the gun like she's obviously not like the, you know, gun toter. She didn't really know what she was doing. I've never been shot in life or on screen even.
I'll tell you a funny story about that particular shot though. So she's running around this corner and coming out into the courtyard, right?
Yes.
And I just happen to be sitting over there. I you go different places and this and that, you know, when you're a producer and you're just looking at the scene and like, you know, we didn't have a video village because it was just so, you know, I wanted to see the scene being shot. And so I'm actually sitting at the same place Naomi's sitting, and she's just like psyching herself up for this like crying thing. And it doesn't take, you know, she's an amazing actress. It doesn't take that much, but it's interesting to see like the process where she was just like, you know, physically sort of getting into the whole thing and da da da. And then she's like, you know, running a little bit down the hallway to speed up and run real fast to come around the corner and stuff like that. And she's there and it's like the tears are coming. And even like, you know, I know that's not like jokingly, but that's method shit. Like she is in, it's there. And I just saw it. And I remember thinking to myself, like, God damn, Naomi's bringing this real. Like, it's a thing, you know? And so she did it. And I was like, and I think that was one take actually. I think it was one take. Just that was it. We didn't have to do it again, I want to say. It was just like...
Couldn't afford to do it again.
my favorite thing as a producer, as a money-grubbing producer, my favorite words ever spoken are always, "Moving on!" And I'm like, let's go!
Well, I remember that scene because it was one of those things where, you know, again, unlike with a bigger budget production, you don't have like PAs in every which corner going, you know, we're on in three. We're, you know, we're going two. Or, you know what I mean? So I'm like hanging back, trying to kind of time this out. Like, cause I don't want to be too hysterical. Like, I don't want the weeping or the snot or whatever it is to be beyond, you know what I mean? Like, you want to time it out so that it's like realistic. Like, in my mind, my husband has just been, killed. Spoiler alert. And, you know, so I'm in mid, like, hysteria. And so I don't want it to be, like, past or pre or, you know. So it was a little bit tricky in that regard, like, trying to sort of anticipate, you know, be my own sort of PA and do what I need to do, yeah.
Well, since I'm allowed to spoil, we're going to go ahead. The oven bake scene. What did you really bake in the oven?
All right.
Not a controversial scene.
Like, for anything that we get shit on for this movie, like, our number one comment on Amazon is like, you killed a cat. I didn't even watch the rest of the movie. And I'm like, this is like paying for a boxing match, right? And then someone bloodies someone's nose. And you're like, oh, blood. You're like, what the fuck's wrong with you? Why wouldn't you think this is appropriate for what you're trying to watch? It's not a real cat, by the way. It's not a fucking cat. It's a fucking piece of plastic, right? Like, and not even a very good looking piece of plastic. And so this is one thing, right? The other thing is that we tested, because of my background and Shane's background, we tested the shit out of this. Like, we as much as we could for a low budget. Like, I mean, we basically like did, you know, we invited friends of friends, you know, groups of 20 people to watch the film, right? And then we did a focus group afterwards to kind of figure out what was going on and what they weren't understanding and what they needed and what they didn't need, right? And so for me, I'm a hardcore horror person, right? And I wanted to see that fucking cat, like, just like, I wanted to actually open the fucking oven and like the cat pops out and his eye just explodes or, you know, something like that to happen. But what we found out from the test screenings is that like 75% of the audience thought it was just enough. And it's literally just a piece of shitty plastic. Like I mean, God bless the people, production designers, whatever, but this particular prop was not up to speed, let's say, as much as we wanted to be. And we were going to have to do some sort of like, VFX or whatever, you know, stuff on it. And it was a thing where David and my partner Shane, David the director, writer-director, and Shane were like, my partner was like, I don't think we need any more. And I was like, you're fucking out of your minds. We need to see this fucking cat go bleh, and like, you know, whatever. I want to see something really just like, this is the scene. And they were like, no, we don't need it. And I fought them and I was like, I'm going to pay $5,000 out of my own fucking pocket to make this happen because I fucking want to see it, right? And then we tested it and they were like, everyone was like, nah, we're good. And I was like, God damn it. So what we found out though was that the 25%, including myself, that did want to see more of the cat, they were hardcore horror fans. But what I knew and what we knew was that we don't have a hardcore horror movie. We have a movie that's more of a psychological thriller with elements of horror, right? It definitely has its like gory moments, but they come and they go very quickly. And so we didn't want to alienate the 75% that were just like, nah, we don't need it. And it didn't make any sense. And also David would have fought me really hard on it. So it's the thing where we're like, all right, I can admit I lose. I can admit I'm a man. I can, you know, whatever. So that's sort of what the story with the cat was. I hope that makes sense. It's always long-winded when we tell these
stories. No, I wanted to ask. So, Naomi, what's your favorite kind of role to have? A comedy, a lead actress, the crazy friend? What works best for you?
I'm never the lead actress. I mean, I'm always the crazy friend. I'm always sort of the character. I would say comedy is probably my, you know, lead. As I entered this career, I always thought, you know, it's so competitive that it's best to, you know, get a gimmick, like figure out what it is that you do and just do that. And so, I decided it was comedy. I mean, I do have kind of a fast paced, like, comedic vibe. So I got involved with a comedy theater here called The Groundlings, which people may know. It was the home of like pretty much anyone and everyone that ever went to SNL. I was there for many years, it was very good for me. Ultimately, I think I was quite limited because I was just doing these like, you know, 3 to 5 minute sketches basically. It was a great education. I went to a decent drama school, Northwestern in Chicago, which is actually where I met Alok's high school best friend, which is how I know Alok. But anyway, there I got a really classical, like, drama education. You know, I learned my Chekhov and Ibsen. And then I went on to Groundlings, which was quite the opposite. There was no Ibsen. There was no Chekhov. But it was a real think tank. Like, it was really, the best of the best. And, I sometimes call it, like, the best of times, worst of times, because we were, it was very competitive, and you were only as strong as your weakest link, but you also couldn't have anybody be too much better than you, because then you don't look good. So, ultimately, it's almost like being on Survivor. Like, they, at a certain point, you're, like, up or out. And I got pretty much as far along as you can get, and then ultimately I was out. And, that was really hard for me, especially because I really put all my eggs in this basket. And I always thought that, comedy was it. Like, I was going to, Lauren Michaels would come to the Groundlings, he'd see me, he'd pluck me up, take me to SNL, and that would, that'd be the end of it. And obviously it didn't happen like that. I did take a lot of the sketches that I wrote and developed there at the Groundlings, and I ultimately like put them on YouTube, and I I figured just because I wasn't on Melrose Avenue didn't mean I had to be done acting and writing and creating, which was good, because ultimately, let's face it, even though, say, American Horror Story, which of course was my break, is a totally different, genre and everything. At the same time, they still needed something to Google. You know what I mean? Like, in order for them to entrust this role in someone like me, they needed to have the proof is in the pudding. And the fact is, in many ways, I probably was a little bit of a wild card, but this character, Pepper anyway, they needed someone. They weren't going to, cover Kathy Bates in those kind of prosthetics. You know what I mean? You're paying a premium to see Kathy Bates' face. You know what I mean? Whereas me, like, who cares about my face? No one knows my face. So, yeah, I'm slathering, whatever. The fact is, I did have this a strong background in improv, and that's what a lot of this was. Like, a lot of Pepper wasn't scripted. A lot of her was just, filler I don't want to say background acting, but, I was playing with string, and I was delivering the fat lady food, and I was sort of just in character all the time. And, and that's what I learned to do on stage. So that's a very long answer to say. I've always fancied myself a comedienne, a comedic actress. Lily Tomlin, Carol Burnett, Tracy Ullman, Gilda Radner. These are sort of my touchstones. Ultimately, my career has sort of taken a different turn, and I'm fine with that. I feel like, horror and comedy actually is interesting. When you look at these sort of iconic horror roles like Freddy Krueger or Jason Voorhees, it's like you could almost dial them up or down. Like, if they go too far, they're comedic, And I feel like Pepper totally could have belonged in a comedy. I had to temper her, and for that matter, every now and then I did get the comment. Fortunately, they were meant as a compliment, but from people, from producers, they say, "Oh, you're hilarious in tonight's episode." And of course, I was like, "Ooh, thank you," because it's it's not a comedy. But I think I'm very comfortable with comedy, but at the same time, I think it's almost easier to go the other way. Like, I think it's easier for comedic actors to go to drama than dramatic actors to turn on the comedy. I know that I've actually been told by, you know, friends of mine from drama school, because they've caught me in podcasts just like this one saying things like, I'd never done drama before American Horror Story. And they're like, BS, we saw you. Remember that checkup in Ibsen? We did that, you know, like, so it's true. Like, I have done that. It's just for a very long time, I sort of decided I wasn't any good at it, which of course was not true, but.
Okay, I do have to ask about standing stress position. How painful was it to do this for your lead actress?
Well, you know what? It's movie magic, right? Like, you know, she had to do it for a long
time. I know that, but I mean, it does not look...
Let's put it this way. We didn't have time for it to be method, right? Like, where she's like, I'm doing this, and I've been here for, like, you know, not even 5 minutes. We don't have that time. Like, it was the thing. And so think about Nicole Brighton Bloom. This young lady, you know, sadly, she was our first choice, right? And then we had another actress that came in that sort of turned our attention because she was a very established TV actress who just sent us a self-tape and was like, you know, I want to do your movie. And we're like, wow, this already puts us in the black. And so we're like, we have to do this. And David Marmer, you know, to his credit, was like, I don't want to do that. I want Nicole, da da da. And we had to get him in a room and just be like, he has to come to Jesus. I have mortgaged my house. I need this fucking money back. Right? So it was a thing where allegedly, it was a thing where we were like, we'll fly you up to Toronto or whatever, you know, place she's shooting her shitty television show. And we did like twice to like, you know, help him, you know, rehearse with her and stuff like that. And then it came down to the thing, like on the Monday before the Thursday we're shooting, we're in a Gelson's. A Gelson's is a very high-end, like, grocery store. And as you do with being, you know, a shitty independent producer, sometimes you have to, you wear many hats. And so one of them that day was that, this young lady, required some sort of feminine energy drink, right? A feminine energy drink. And we were like, what is a feminine energy drink? Like, I'll tell you what it is. It's, the company that makes this drink. I can't say who it is because I don't want to shit on them. Because they actually sent us, like, they were going to send us a truckload, literally cases and cases of this energy drink, as long as we put it in the movie. And, you know, we're in this Gelson's because it's not going to get to set until 3 days into shooting. And God forbid we don't have this, you know, this young woman's feminine energy drink. So I personally go and, like, look at this, like, Marina Del Rey Gelson's to find this energy drink. And I found, like, a case of it. And I tell the manager, I'm like, hey, listen, can you go look in the back? See if you have any more. Can you just do us a favor? Like, I don't think we do. I'm like, oh, please come on. Just check in the back. And he's like, all right. So he's going to check on it. Meanwhile, I got a phone call from this young lady's agent. And she's out. No reason. No rhyme. No reason. And not only is she out, but she made us, like, hire, like, you know, a friend. I mean, I don't know if it's allegedly her boyfriend or whatever. But he's on some kind of shitty, like, CW The Empire show that I've never watched. That I'm like, well, you know, if it's good enough for CW, it's good enough for us. We'll take him. You know, he can act fairly. He can come in on a schedule, you know, whatever. He learns his lines, I'm thinking, because it's TV, and it's like, it has to be very fast. And so now he's out, too, because she's out, right? And then, like producing partner Shane and I go to the bar to have a drink just to sit down and think about what's going on here, because I can just see the money from my house going away. And we find out that we get another call. And it's our older lady actress who's playing Miss Stanhope. We had somebody else before. We had Susan Davis, who plays the role brilliantly now.
Love her.
So what happens is that this actress, her husband has collapsed, rushed to the hospital, is dead.
Oh,
this all happens within, like, you know, an hour of us finding out the other two are out. So we've lost three people in one day, on a Monday, and we're shooting on a Thursday. And then we basically try to move the whole movie back a week, like, to Monday. And fast forward to Friday, we basically have called Nicole Brighton Bloom. She's come back on and said yes, okay? And we're like, okay, great. Fly out here as soon as you can. Like, she's young. I have to literally pick her up from the airport, take her to the rental car place, like, to rent her the car because they don't trust her. Another one of the shitty things, hats you have to wear as a you know, independent producer. And so we at least have her, right? She gets 3 hours to rehearse with David Marmer. That's it. Before she, you know, gives us, like, tour de force performance and helps, like, support the entire film, right? But she does it, and it works out, and the rest is history. But on Friday morning, we still don't have Miss Stanhope character. We still don't have the Brian character. So we're looking through reels. It's like, you know, 7 o'clock in the morning. I find Susan Davis's reel. Susan Davis was the mom in War Games. And she's also Robert Altman's cousin. He made her come out here. She's like, there's so many terrible actresses out here. I know you can act. I saw you in your drama play. So he makes her come out here. And she's gorgeous. And, like, you know, she had all these roles throughout her, like, life. She's a character actress, amazing character actress. And she's done, like, you know, Darren Bozeman's movies, like, you know, a couple horror movies he'd done. And, like, you know, between Saw and, like, Genetic Repo Opera, whatever, and stuff like that. You know, she's kind of sort of used to horror. And so so what happens is that she is actually – hold on. Sorry. 1 second. Sorry. My wife and my baby just walked in here. They're like, ah.
No.
Sorry, baby. So what happens is that I look at her reel, and at the end of the reel is a phone number. And I call the phone number thinking I'm going to get an agent or manager. And it's actually Susan Davis. And I'm like, ah. Well, this is highly inappropriate, but I'm going to pitch you the movie, and I'm going to pitch you us. And so she listened to the whole thing, and she's like, well, you know, I've never been in a cult movie before. This sounds interesting. And 9:30 in the morning, by 11:30, we signed her. And now, fast forward, now we're in Barney's Beanery, and we're now trying to call in all the favors we have because we don't have the male lead yet, and we're shooting on Monday. And we're just, like, calling, like, Blumhouse, their head of, like, post-production, like, please help us. You know me. Help me, you know. And they're trying to, like, keep all the agencies open, like CAA and ICM and Gersh and everybody else. And finally, around, like, 7, we get a call. And it's Gersh. And they were very instrumental in helping us because they're also, like, Nicole Bryden Bloom's agent as well as Giles Maddie's agent. And it's Giles Maddie, his agent, and they're like, he's going to do it. And we're like, ah! But what we found out later was that he was literally driving down from San Francisco to L.A. and he just pulled over to the side of the road to, like, read the script on his phone. And he only read his part. And I remember being so offended hearing that later on. Like, ah, he wouldn't read our whole script? What's wrong with you? But then Naomi told me, and you can tell the story about why you only read your part.
Well, no, I mean, first of all, he's driving to L.A. Like, he's not going to sit there and read a 90-minute movie off the side of the freeway. So, but, you know, I'm just saying it's quite common to quick just scroll through, make sure it's not a porno, you know what I mean? Look at your lines, like, how compromising is this? And, yeah, yay or nay.
I mean, listen,
he read the script before he shot the movie. Like, you have to know that.
Grant you that. But I remember hearing it, and I was just offended that he would read our brilliant script and, you know, whatever. But the point is this. He read the script. He said yes on a Friday night. We're like, we're making a movie on Monday if everyone shows up, right? So that's...
Although, he's lucky. I mean, you never know when you're scrolling like that. Yeah, so you know it's not a porno, but still, you don't know, like, what are in all those pages that you're not reading. You know what I mean? Like, he's lucky it was a decent script. Beyond decent. It was great.
I think I've given you extra information. I don't know if I've answered the question because I don't remember the question.
It's all good. I have nothing else about the film. I think we went over everything I really wanted to go over. But I do, before I end every interview, I have fun questions. So if you guys don't mind doing those, I'll let you go. Because I know you guys will talk for an hour if I ask you any more questions.
No.
We will.
You take as much time as you need. We want it to be really good, or not, if not great. So
you guys answered all my questions. I gave you all the good stuff. I don't like to ruin movies. I really don't. I just like to get the filmmaking process, which you've done great. First time on the show, I need to know your favorite film. If you come back a second time, you won't get these questions, I promise.
Oh, right. Ladies first.
Our favorite film in life?
Correct.
Borat, the first one.
I could see that from you, no doubt about it.
I know. Well, people expect, you know, something like, I don't know, Sophie's Choice, or, you know, Lawrence of Arabia, or something, like, you know, because I'm an actor. But no, I think he, Sacha Baron Cohen, is brilliant. You know what I mean? He's the most fearless, actor, comedian, working today. So, yeah, Bora, no question.
I concur in this. And the second one is actually really good. Not as good because it was lightning in a bottle, the first one. But, like, holy shit, the second one's pretty amazing, too. I think that girl's going to get nominated for Best Supporting Actress. She might.
What's your favorite movie, Alok?
You know, I'm kind of the normal fanboy geek in that regard where it's like The Godfather. You know, it's like, it really is. Like, every time it's on, or Goodfellas, I mean, for that matter, every time either of those movies are on, I'm like, ah, holy shit, I gotta watch this. Like, I mean, it doesn't matter. It's like, I've seen this 100. I have, like, the umpteenth version of whatever Blu-ray and blah, 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 blah. But if it's just on, like, HBO, and I'm like, all right, I'll watch you, you know? So, that's my favorite, you know, just in general movie. But, like, if I was telling you my favorite horror movie, for example, though, it's definitely, like, almost a tie, but just slightly, because I think the memory of having the way I watched it was so amazing to me as a kid, probably too young to see it, let's call it. But John Carpenter's The Thing, and then Shining, which is so, so close. Like, I mean, Shining I saw in the middle of the day, and it fucked me up. Like, you know, seriously. I'll tell you real quick, if you want another movie that's a new, I think it's going to be a new classic in some regard, but I just saw it, and it's a friend of mine's, like, movie, but, like, I was like, holy shit, I didn't even know he was doing this movie, and it's great. It's The Dark and the Wicked. Have you seen that yet?
I have not even heard of it.
Holy shit. Run, don't walk. Just go fuck. It's like number one on iTunes horror right now.
Okay.
Just watch it. Like, and I would say this, just buy it. Don't rent it. Just buy it because it's something you'll show to friends and you'll know that you are very clever for having introduced them to, and they'll remember you for it in that regard.
This might be a good question for Naomi. What is your favorite on-set meal ever?
I would say, I mean, usually I would say the meal I'm having is the best, you know, because the food's on set, so pretty darn good. But, you know, when I
not come hard.
Back. That's what I did
not. That's not true, though. You know, Alok's mom cooked for us. Oh, I mean, this was a low-budget movie. Everyone did their part.
I mean, to be truthful, she didn't cook, but she got the Indian caterer for us, who is a very close family friend. We had, like, a nice chicken tikka masala and different things, and a veggie option for everyone as well. So we actually, Indian food was such a hit, we did it twice. Like, not only for the initial 15-day shoot, we did it twice there. We actually did it for the 4-day shoot, because everyone was like, this Indian food that you got was amazing. So we did
it. And I remember, although this is not my answer, I do remember the crafty guy kind of having a little thing for me, and he kept sending me home with all the cakes from, what's that really delicious bakery in the valley in Glendale? Wherever you were getting
Porto's.
I had, like, I was being paid in cake, I swear. It was great.
Well, I mean, the thing of it, though, is, I'd like to just real quick before you finish your answer, Naomi, when you don't have any money, and you don't have any money, you're not paying anybody, like, poor Naomi Grossman, like, is, like, she'll never do a movie for this amount of money again. Like, you know, it's a thing. But at least you feed them well, right? That's a huge thing to other filmmakers that are coming up in this and that. Like, listen, you don't have money, whatever else, make sure some of your budget, at least get these people fed so they're happy to be there making no money.
That said, my favorite meal on set was when I came back to do Apocalypse. You know, I'd done season 2, Asylum 4, Freak Show, and then I, you know, wasn't back for a few seasons. And my first day back on set, they were serving meatloaf, which, of course, for any American Horror Story fans, they remember the scene in Freak Show where I was denied my meatloaf. And I was, you know, shouting, meatloaf, meatloaf. So yeah, it was kind of like, wow, I don't think they planned that, but it was a very happy coincidence.
Okay. This should be fun for my last question. You two both watch as much film, probably as much film as I do. What's your go-to film when people say, I've never seen that, and you put it on immediately?
Ladies first.
Alok is more this person than I am, but you know, I'm shocked. Even just this weekend, I recommended Parasite to someone. I was like, duh. Like, it only won all the Oscars last year. It's not a good answer, but like, that movie blew my mind. And it, obviously I'm not the only one. It blew the Academies too. And so that for me was surprising that there's still people out there in the world that haven't seen that movie.
For me, I would tell you this. It just depends on the person, frankly. Like, I mean, it depends how old they are. If they're just like this young, like, oh, I just made this short film and I'm like 22 and I'm like, all right, that's cool. Have you seen this? Have you seen this? Have you seen this? And they're like, no. And I'm like, son or daughter, I'm going to have to write you a list. Like, I'm going to just write you a list. And I'll do it just because, like, you know, it takes me like 5 minutes to do it. And like, you know, and it's so accessible now. Everything's accessible now. Like, it's very rare that you can't find stuff. I mean, the really dirty stuff or the really gory stuff and stuff like that, there's a problem in the way that, like, all these different big companies and stuff, like, aren't as willing to put that stuff out there, like on a streaming platform. Like, I mean, God bless like Shudder and different things like this. I mean, I think Shudder's the best money spent, like every month. It's like, you know, I think I pay like less than half a beer in LA for Shudder, right? And they're programming it really well too, just as an aside. But they're one of the few places that's daring enough to kind of, you know, put like the Cannibal Holocaust and like the weird things that are just like, you know, oh, we're killing this. We really didn't kill animals in this movie, right? Like, or whatever it is. They're still kind of putting it out there, but I feel like that sort of place is getting less and less as much as these bigger companies sort of grab these libraries and choose and program what they want. And it's like, it can be very, you know, I mean, we love Netflix. Netflix is a great partner of ours in this, Matt. But, you know, if you look at them compared to other places, it's very vanilla. There, you know, there's a movie called, have you seen the movie Host? Not to be confused with Host on Shudder. Have you seen the movie Host, plural, yet?
I'm not sure if I have or not.
Well, you would remember it because it literally just came out, like, I think in August or even September. And it's probably the most ferocious horror movie of the year, right? Ooh. And you can immediately tell that movie won't be picked up by Netflix because it has this one scene that's so memorable. Like, you're going to lose your shit when you see it. I can tell you this. Like, and if you want, we're friends with the filmmakers. I can hook you up with them. Anyways.
Please do it.
No, for sure. They're amazing guys. There's a duo that's doing it, actually. Richard Oakes and Adam Leder. And they've literally made this thing that is just like ferocious. Like, I'm stealing that sort of like Stephen King, gave Evil Dead a quote that said this, like, the most ferociously something horror movie of the year when it came out. And to be honest, like, it is the only reason I rented that movie when I was in high school. Because I saw the cover art and then I saw Stephen King had said this quote, right? And this is the reason first time I watched The Evil Dead, which is one of my all-time favorite movies, right? And these guys, I keep on saying it again, this is the most ferocious horror movie of the year. And it's true though. It's a great film. The dark and the wicked, amazing film. Like, the other movie that's really cool that I like, and I'm friends with the filmmakers, just FYI. But they did a good job with it. Sorry. Give me a second. I don't want to get the name wrong. Naomi! You tell us what you like this year.
Well, no, I don't know. Elope really is an encyclopedia.
The honeymoon phase, not honeymoon phase. The honeymoon phase is the name of the movie.
I saw that.
What did you think of it?
I loved it. I had them on the interview. I did an interview with them.
Oh, cool.
I didn't have Chloe. I just had her husband on.
How could you get Chloe? They live together. They're in the same.
She didn't. I don't know. He only came on, but I loved his film. I've seen that one.
She's the lead actress. As people don't know that she's the lead actress in the movie, and he's the director. And they're lovely people. We got to meet them at the Otherworlds Film Festival. Oh, you know, the other thing I did this year, actually, that I think is very interesting. Sorry, I'm switching subjects for a second. Is that we went on such an amazing festival run And we went to all the different festivals. Like, I made sure that I tried to go to every festival I could. There's only, like, one or two that I couldn't go to and that David and Shane went to instead. Like, Telluride I couldn't go to because I was, like, flying from Manchester to Melbourne to go to the Monster Fest over there and stuff like that. But the whole thing of it is that Other Worlds is an amazing festival in Austin, Texas. It's kind of overlooked compared to other festivals. And since I went to so many festivals, I actually helped write an article for Movie Maker Magazine about the usually they only do a top 20 or top 25 genre film festival sort of list or whatever. And it just so happened that I was at Sundance, and I happened to be sat across from the Movie Maker Magazine editor-in-chief and his wife, who had just bought the thing from the old owner. And I turned to him, and I was like, ah, this is yours? This is yours now? You guys have the shittiest list. your list is bullshit. So I kept on telling him, like, listen, it looks like someone is trying to suck someone's dick over there. Like, oh, this festival over here, like, did they have to suck your dick or did they pay you money to be able to get in? Because they don't deserve to be in that top 25. And in fact, the top 25 is bullshit. You need to make a top 50. And so the guy at the end of the conversation, at the dinner, was like, why don't you fucking help us write this fucking article then? And I was like, all right, I'll do it. So we did. And so it just released like last month, and it's actually online and stuff like that. And we can, if you want to put that in the liner notes, for people who want to like enter a film festival, like film festivals that are genre film festivals, there's not been a lot of resources for people. I swear to God, if you look at online, it's hard to find like, you know, why is this film festival better than this film festival stuff, right? So we helped write this article with a lot of amazing people, like Peter Polk, who's one of our executive producers, who's like Ty West, like, you know, producing partner and everything he does, like House of the Devil and stuff like that. He was on our movie, helped us out quite a bit. Great, 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 great guy. Heather Buckley, who did like The Ranger, like producer of The Ranger. Ton of people. Read the article. And it'll educate you, you know, help you understand why certain festivals are better than other festivals and stuff like that. It was actually a really cool sort of thing to be involved with and stuff. So, any which way, sorry. I'm sure this is all off topic and stuff.
All interesting. It's all good.
Cool. Naomi, I mean, anything else on your end? I'm sorry.
I don't think there's anything you haven't said.
I agree.
Boom.
Well, no, Alok is like the encyclopedia of all things movies. So I just sort of defer to him with that. Besides, my sensibilities are a little, you know, they're not horror, really. I mean, you know, Borat's my favorite movie. Like, I my favorite movies are often, like, foreign films. Like, the, you know, Almodóvar movies. Like, Tie Me Up, Tie Me Down, and Mala Educación, and Mujeres al Borde de un Ataque de Nervios, and all sorts of movies that sound really great flying out my mouth, but, you know. No one knows about them.
Have you seen Dead Dicks yet?
I haven't.
No. Have you seen Dead Dicks yet?
Me? No. You're giving me a bunch of films I haven't heard of, which is shocking.
This is a great film. it's a husband and wife team who wrote and directed it. I mean, trust me on this. How tough is that? Like, if you're like living with your wife and like, you fucked this up. Yeah, you fucked this up. Like, but it's actually one of the better movies of the year. They actually were in our class at Fantasia, along with stuff like, you know, you've seen Swallow, right?
You're talking to me or?
No, I'm talking to you. I'm talking to you. Sorry.
No, I haven't. You're killing me on all these indies I haven't seen.
These aren't just indies. These are like best of like your list this year kind of shit. Well, I'm giving you right now.
I'm gonna watch them because people need to tell me. I watch anything. I watch 400 a year. So if I haven't
well,
heard of,
then you need to write the. You watch.
I've written them down. I'll show you right here. They're written.
You should check in with me every like you know month.
I should.
I'll say like, listen, watch this because this I watch everything. Eventually, I watch everything. There's
so do
I. Like, I mean, you know, you can pay for all these subscriptions of this, that, the other. Shudder right now still is your sort of almost best money spent as far as horror. There's a lot of horror on Amazon and like Hulu that you're seeing on VOD that you're like, I really want to see that. And then a month later it's on like fucking Hulu and you're like, so thank God I didn't buy that right away. You
know? I think me and Naomi would sit and watch some Brunel or stuff because that's what I tend to be watching, a lot of foreign films lately.
Cool.
Yeah.
I think you got to know where people come from to get to where they are now. You need to go back to Brunel and Cassavetes and Lusard and watch all that stuff.
Well, speaking of Cassavetes, we just were applying for the Independent Spirit Awards today. And so we were like, all these different awards to try to tag and whatever else and this and that. But we'll see. Like, let's see if we get in. We also, supposedly the Saturn people are looking at us too.
Cool.
Oh, that's great.
Let's see. I mean,
I've been to the Saturn Awards. I could see this there for sure.
Well, I mean, I thought it's more like sci-fi and fantasy, frankly, but they definitely do some horror in there too, so it just depends. And you know, they wrote us a nice, we had talked to them about it, and they'd written us a nice letter back, and actually a couple different exchanges, and I'm like, well, that's what happens, hopefully, fingers crossed.
Okay, before you won't fit my feet, because I want you so much, thank you for your time, and have a great evening.
Thank you.
Thanks so much.
I'm gonna stop the recording.